This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
This podcast contains swearing and adult content, but you should listen anyway.
Reliving trauma through a humorous lens. Watch out. That's why Alison and Fern are friends. What you say? We love misfortune. Wheel spinning round. Hoo-hoo. This is the podcast thanks to BBC Sounds. Yeah.
That was amazing. Wheel of Misfortune, talking about the bad stuff that makes you feel good.
So good. So this podcast, Fern, what is it about?
Me and Alison like laughing at humiliating, horrific stuff that's happened to us. And we think there's an audience that also likes that. So we invite you guys to share your stories on a given topic every week. And then we each do a story on that week's topic. Plus, we have a guest.
And we got a special guest today. It is James Acaster.
Yes.
And the wheel is spun on pets. And I'm so looking forward to what he has to say on pets, because Fern, our listeners, I mean, please talk about what our listeners were like this week for voice notes.
I'm so sorry if we didn't include your voice note, but it was really, really hard to narrow it down to four.
It really was. So hard. It's been a wonderful week.
This first one's cracking though. Hang on.
When I was 16, I had a kitten who was quite inquisitive, and she delved into the bin in my bedroom and ate a used condom. I would never have found out about this except that she was chasing her tail in the kitchen, going round and round and round like kittens do. And me and my dad and my brother, who was 10 at the time, were watching her and became aware that she wasn't actually chasing a tail. She was chasing something that was hanging out of her bum. And it became really obvious to me and possibly to my dad that it was a condom that she'd eaten, tried to poo out, and which had got kind of stuck halfway, and it had a bit of poo on it as well. And my brother, who was only young, looked at it and sort of saw this kind of fleshy looking, flesh coloured thing, and went, "Is that chicken?"
Oh, that's disgusting.
At least if she'd done anal, she could hide it and be like, "That's cat poo."
There's an easy way. You could just pretend that someone had sex with the cat. You could be like, "I just left it on there."
The cat's practicing safe sex.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's disgusting. Oh,
but
my
no
god.
One ever shags cats.
No, they don't. Of all the animals, they don't. I think it's because cats kind of are, they're very picky. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, I feel a dog is way more trusting than a cat. I feel like a cat wouldn't get themselves in situations that dogs would.
Well, I regularly have to cut shit out of my cat's fur, and he's a very gentle cat, but just trying to do that, it's a two-person job, because it's like, he's so big now, it's like pinning a man to the floor. Right, let's do this next one. Also, how was the condom flesh coloured? That's not a thing.
No, that's true. That's true.
So my pet story is from when I was really young. I was only, I'd say, about 4 years old. We had a bowl of goldfish, and they were on top of this kind of high press thing that I was never allowed to go near, and I was never allowed to feed them. And I used to be awful jealous of my older brothers who were able to, they were tall enough to be able to reach the bowl to feed them. And I remember one day, my mom was like outside for some reason, so the goldfish were unattended. And I was sitting there thinking, do you know what? I am going to feed them, and I'm going to give them the best food that I can possibly think of. And I fed the bowl of goldfish a bottle of Lucozade and half a sliced pan. And the sliced pan soaked up all the water. And the Luke's aid and all the goldfish died.
Oh, that's horrific. Oh, that's horrific. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
But she had the best intentions.
No, I know that. But, like, you could say that about, like, any atrocity that started with, like, I had good intentions.
I thought that the fish would just swim faster from the Lucozade.
Oh, that's the... And when you're a kid as well, you are like, what is better than fizzy drinks and, like, white bread? There is no better meal for sustenance than that.
When you know? She says half a pan, does that mean half a loaf of bread?
Yeah. Half a sliced pan. Yeah. So it properly soaked it up. Like, that would be like a fish porridge, a big luminous orange porridge with dying cold fish in it.
That's grim. This next one's about hamsters, which I had loads of, so I really like this.
When I was like 8 or 9 years old, I had this pet hamster named Matilda, after the book character, and it had one of those little hamster balls that would like roll around and stuff. And one day, my mom put the hamster in the little ball.
Do you know the ball she's on about?
Yeah, I've always, like, it's like a little hamster version of Zorbin.
Exactly. It's see-through and you put the hamster in it. But I always wonder if it's a sort of hellish experience for the hamster, because the way they look when they're running about in it.
That's true. And the sounds of them, like, they, because you buy a hamster and you think it's a good pet and then you realise it doesn't do stuff until nighttime. So, yeah. You know, like the daytime, you're like, let's play. And he wants to sleep. And it's like, is this hamster depressed?
Oh my God, well, those balls are like the bell jar for hamsters, if you ever read that. that's what makes me think of seeing them run about in it, even as a child. Right, anyway.
And my younger brother was watching her like run around the house, and she got out and was never to be seen again. And I was devastated. Like, I loved this hamster. And so to kind of make up for it, my mom let me get a guinea pig like very soon afterwards. And this guinea pig had like a light orangey red fur. So I named it Pumpkin, right? Cute little guinea pig name. And I was so terrified that Pumpkin was going to escape, similar to Matilda the hamster. So I never took the guinea pig out of the cage, like when my mom was there, because I was afraid my mom was going to like look away for a second and run out. So anyway, I played with it alone, like in my room when no one else was there. And so one day I came home from school and this family of like 5 redheads was sitting like in the front of the house, and they said that they were here for the guinea pig. And apparently my mom had put an ad at the pet store and said something about how like the guinea pig was never played with because she never saw me take it out. And like, it was so horrible. It was horrible because like, this family was so stoked to be getting the guinea pig because the guinea pig had red hair just like them. And they had definitely already claimed this guinea pig. And I'm still not over it. It's been like 11 years. So that's probably my most traumatic pet story.
Wait. Yeah, well, like a horror film.
That
a
is...
family of entirely ginger people come and take your ginger hamster.
And like, what was the mum doing? This is a thing that, wait, could it be like a conversation that you have? You know what I mean? Like that you have with your mum to discuss. Like the mum,
yeah, open communication.
That. Yeah, there was no open communication there, and then you get a family full of ginger people in your sitting room. If you don't have open communication, that is the lesson we've learned from that story. What are they going to do with it? Are they going to take a family portrait with it and pretend it's their kid?
Exactly. It's just weird to have something match. But you see people get dogs that match them all the time.
All the time, yeah. If you were to get a dog that would match you, what do you think it would be?
Probably a pug, because I have breathing difficulties and I'm inbred to the point that I'm cute.
You're an Afghan hound. You're an Afghan hound.
When do you ever see them?
Maybe a whippet.
Oh, I hate whippets.
But you hate yourself as well, so it would be like perfect.
I hate whippets and I hate greyhounds. Why don't I just cover some coat hangers in suede and cuddle them because it would be cheaper. I like sort of floppy-eared Spaniel dogs. Oh, wait, we've got a dog voice note. Hang on.
When I was in second year, so I was about 14, I was walking home from school through a field, a shortcut through a field. I was on my own, which was unusual, when a stray dog appeared out of nowhere. And this is when stray dogs were like common in Ireland, not so much anymore. But anyway, I knew most of the stray dogs in the area, except I hadn't seen this one before. And I was walking along, and I saw it come up towards me, and I was looking at him going, what's the crack here, doggo? And the next thing, he comes right up to me, and I'm like, oh, you're so cute. And he was cute until he started humping my leg. Now, this dog was massive, and I was 5 foot 2, and I was just looking at it going, what the fuck do I do? And there was no one around, which was bizarre for the area that I'm from. And I'm going, what is this dog doing? So you're trying to push him off, like gently, you know? And it wasn't happening. I couldn't get him off. And I was terrified at this point. I was going, oh my God, I can't push him off me in case he goes for me. Like, he might bite me or something. I don't know. So my only option, I decided, was just to keep walking home. I had about 5 minutes till I got home. So I walked all the way up this lane with this dog humping my leg, and I walked all the way into my estate with the dog humping my leg. And I was mortified and terrified at the same time. And it was when I got to my front door, of course, there was no one in, and I'd forgotten my keys. So I had to stand on the doorstep while this dog humped away on my leg. I'm terrified. There's no one around. And then he finished on my leg and left a big stain on my navy O'Neill standard school tracksuit bottoms. And I just didn't know what to do. And then off he wandered into the sunset. And weirdly, I'm not afraid of dogs, even after that happened.
Sounds like this dog learned consent from Irish men.
That's very true. It's a very Irish woman's thing of just, ah, sure, look, he's here now.
The dog shagged her continuously all through the town and all the way to her house.
Yeah, she was walking. I mean, surely that would get you a nickname in school if you saw, like, oh, look, there's Fern. She's being shagged by a dog. Have you ever had like a dog shag your leg? And because
No,
I.
a French bulldog shagged my arm in the bookies one time.
You see, that is the most Fern image I've ever seen of a French bulldog shagging someone's arm in a bookies. It's like, it's
I worked in the
beautiful.
bookies. I wasn't just like in there putting my football coupon on.
That's what I imagined you're doing the pools or something. Like, there is this weird thing of like, you know, maybe it's someone else's dog and they're being a bit affectionate, they're having a bit of fun, and then you realize that they think it's sexual, and you have to like, you can't really hurt the dog's feelings. I feel like I know what I like. I
This
know
is
what
like your terminal niceness has reached new heights.
I think that's what happened to that lady too. You don't want to kink shame a dog. You don't want to go like. You know, I appreciate what you're trying to do. Thank you very much. Not today. You know, I'm pushing away.
I just remembered one time I saw this fat staffy walking in Edinburgh with this drunk guy, and its tits were so big that their nipples were trailing along the ground. And I went, look at the tits on that dog, to my friend. And the guy walking the dog went, leave it alone! And just started screaming and shouting at me. And I thought, that dog has more protection from catcalling than most women. Like, it's...
What a legend. I love that man.
Yeah. Can I do mine first?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I didn't have very many. Basically, I went through a real spell where my main friends were hamsters. And I started off with just one hamster. He was called Chucka, and he was named after a horse, Chucka Mental, that was in Neighbours at the time. I don't know why they're popular pets with little girls, because they don't show affection, and they only are up at night, and children aren't allowed up at night, so they don't really do very much other than eat sunflower seeds and store food in their cheeks. Anyway, he was okay, but then after he died, my mum let me get two hamsters, and I wanted to call them something classy, so I called one Lady Marmalade after a song about whores, and the other one I was like, what's as classy as Lady Marmalade? And I called her Miss Selfridge because I'd heard it was a clothes shop in Edinburgh. I was like, really fancy women go there. And there was one day, so I've weirdly always been into gay rights stuff from a young age.
Yeah.
There was one day Lady Marmalade and Miss Selfridge climbed on each other's backs and were sort of humping up and down. And right. I was like, oh my God, they're mating. And I was just fine with the fact that they were lesbian hamsters.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I realised that they weren't, and one of them was chewing the other one's head.
Oh, so no!
I pulled them off each other, and the one of them just latched onto my hand. So after that, they had to be put in separate cages, and I could only handle one of them wearing rubber gloves, and it was just really horrible and like this nightmare scenario. She ended up getting bullied so badly by Lady Marmalade that one day she was walking around her cage with like what I thought was a baby hamster hanging out her arse, and I was like, Mom, she's giving birth. And then from a lesbian pregnancy. And then we took her to the vets and they were like, she's so stressed that she's pushed her own bowel out, so she's disemboweled herself.
No.
And she had to be put down.
Oh no, Fern!
Every
oh, no.
positive thing that I thought was happening in these hamsters' lives was just violence and death. This is where, as a child, you learn like a sort of Werner Herzog way of life.
Yeah, you do.
They're not girlfriends. They're not having a baby together. They're just dying horrifically. And then after that, we got a chinchilla, which is like this weird squirrel rabbit thing.
Jennifer Lopez has him on coats. That's the only thing I know from chinchillas.
They're normally made for divas' coats.
Yes.
But we had one as a pet and it was horrible because they're so cute, but they're just so unfriendly. And the only time he was ever happy was whenever he heard my dad's voice, he would start sucking his own dick.
Wait, you gotta explain that more. So, your dad, what was your dad saying?
Right, where's my tea? It was any time he heard basically a deep male voice, because it was my dad or my granddad, this hamster would just start sucking his dick. What was the main pet you had when you were growing up?
I had so many strays. Like, I don't think I've ever had, like, a pet that wasn't, like, that didn't have PTSD or something. Like, I had a lot of fish. I was a fish girl. I had one kitten and then a load of dogs, mostly Jack Russells. I had a pet rabbit. And I let the rabbit out in the back garden. It was kind of like a semi-wild, as in like, I knew it would never get out of the back garden and I was very lazy and sometimes I wouldn't put it back into its cage. And then like one day, looked out the back window and my rabbit looked like it was climbing up the wall at like a very high speed. But it was just a ferret tearing out its throat. Like, it just murdered my rabbit. It was a very traumatic experience.
Well, I was thinking pets are a child's first introduction to death and the idea that life isn't Disney.
And it was so, and it was such an introduction. Like, it was such a, like, I have had so many brushes with violent, violent deaths of animals. That was probably the most violent one that I witnessed. And I swear when I was a kid, I thought the ferret was laughing at me. And I hated ferrets. Ferrets kill for pleasure. Like, I looked it up. Ferrets are the only animals in the world, apart from humans, that that kill not just for food. They'll just kill because they want it. They'll eat their whole body weight in meat as well every day. If they were given a chance.
I thought that was dolphins, but is it dolphins have sex for pleasure or dolphins rape for pleasure?
I think dolphins have sex for pleasure. Like, if you put a ferret and a dolphin in a barrel, you got like a Quentin Tarantino film altogether. It's like a very violent sexual barrel.
Oh, James is here. Hello.
So this week we have a comedian and podcaster, James Acaster.
Thank you.
Way.
You have a podcast on BBC Sounds too.
I do have a podcast on BBC Sounds as well.
How many pets did you have growing up? Or what, did you have the same kind of pet over and over? Because I just had loads of hamsters.
Yeah, we had quite a lot of pets who were pet crazy. We had, so my first pet was a rat. I had a rat called Fonzie. And then...
what a great rat.
There was another rat at one point, a mouse... two cats, not all at the same time, a dog, probably like five rabbits, five guinea pigs, countless gerbils and hamsters, stick insects at one point.
I had stick insects.
They were in a tank with sticks, which I just don't think makes sense. Doesn't it help you really appreciate the stick insects and be able to, like, locate them? There'd be little branches and stuff and they'd be sitting on them. And part of the fun was trying to search and find where the stick insects were.
Well, my mum didn't know what to feed my stick insects, so she just starved them to death. And it was a really bitter childhood memory. Because we got given them at nursery.
Yeah.
Which is really
what,
odd
by now. By the nursery?
The nursery gave us yogurt pots of stick insects.
Yogurt pots. How many were in? I'm imagining it like those, you know, those KP corner with the chocolate spread in the corner and then the sticks in it. Was it like that?
No. There was two of them in there. Uh-huh. And then my mum just went, oh, they're disgusting. I'm not catching food for them. And I just watched them very quickly starve.
Oh my God.
Did she say I'm not catching food for them?
She thought that they ate bugs or something. Right, and then I just found out 2 years ago that they ate leaves, which was really brought all the pain back.
How she thought she was going to have to go out and catch insects for them. Like, in the what, properly, like a spider.
That's funny you had rats, because I always think of that as a sort of goth girl's pet.
Yeah.
But they're very friendly.
It was a black rat as well, my first rat, so it was proper hardcore.
Nice.
I don't know why that was the first one I chose. I think I kind of, like, I wanted to choose the pet that everyone else didn't like, but not to be like, you know, you lot don't like it and I've got... It was more like I felt sorry for it because no one else liked it. I wanted to get the one that was, like, you know, people didn't like, which is a theme with me choosing pets.
Oh, that's lovely. And what was your most horrific pet death as a child?
Very good question. Well, I don't think any of them died in like a dramatic way. I mean, obviously that my first pet, the rat Fonzie, was the most kind of like, that was the first death I had to kind of like go through. And I remember being really sad about that. And really, really cry. And I helped bury it in the garden.
Did you put him in a coffin?
Oh, I put him in. I can't remember what we put him in, but I remember he used to like, love eating bread. And I buried him with a little bit of that bread, with like the end of the bread. It was so sad. And I was like crying so much. And I remember putting the bread in with him. And that was like my thing that I wanted to do. I mean, that's too hardcore. Like, emotionally, that is full on.
if I die, I want to like get buried with party rings or something, just as a, like, you know.
That'd work.
It would. I want to get buried with bread.
Yeah,
or in a bread coffin that you can eat your way out if there's a mistake.
That's, you'd be fine. Eat your way out into the soil, but yeah, fair enough. Still.
No, still.
No, nice, isn't it?
Was there any pet that you weren't allowed?
I mean, a dog was the one for ages where we wanted a dog, and we just, it was just no, no, no for a long time. And then eventually we got a dog.
What was the dog called?
The dog was called Minnie. It was a miniature dachshund.
Right.
But like the run to the litter. And again, I chose it. So like we went round to this lady's house who had like a million sausage dogs. And this new litter had just been born. And there was like this one that was like so much smaller than the rest of them and a real like wimp. And I was like, we have to have this one. Because I just couldn't stand the thought of going home with another one. And knowing that that little wimpy one was on its own back there. So I, like, I was like, got to have this one. And my dad, because my dad was resisting for a long time, didn't want a dog. And then when we did have a dog, he was like, the one condition, because this was, tells you a lot about my dad, is that he still has conditions about stuff. The condition is, I get to name the dog. And we're like, fine. And he named it Minnie, and we were like, great, because it's a miniature dachshund, so that makes sense. He was like, no, but we're spelling it M-I-N-N-E-Y. And we were like, why are we doing that? And he was a school teacher at the time, my dad. It's like, because years ago, there was this kid that I taught, his name was Stephen Minnie, and that's how he spelled his surname. And my dad just thought it was so funny, which we didn't get it at all. I'll admit that now as an adult, and I'm turning into my dad a bit more, I totally get why that's funny, and I think it's funny. I think it's funny to name a dog after a random kid that meant absolutely nothing to you and just give the dog the kid's surname, and the rest of your family don't understand the reference. It's a female dog as well, named it after Stephen Minnie, this kid that you taught.
That's so fucking weird. What's your most traumatic, if we haven't covered it already, traumatic or humiliating pet story?
So, right, I entered Stephen Minnie the sausage dog in a dog show when I was probably seven. All my memories of bad things happening to me are when I was seven, and I don't know why. They're probably I probably wasn't seven, but in my head I'm always seven. But yeah. We didn't know a dog show was going to happen that morning. We had gone to East Carlton Country Park, I think, or Brigstock Country Park, one of the two that we used to take the dogs for walks. And there was a dog show on there, which is just for, like, you know, just for members of the public. So it wasn't like a big deal dog show. It wasn't like professionals. And we sat and we watched it for a while. And I'm pretty sure this is the reason I do stand-up as well, is because if I watch something, I want to do it. So it's not like I really have a passion for it. But if I ever see anyone doing anything that's like on a stage or performance, I really want to get on stage and do it as well. And I was like, oh, I got to enter Minnie in one of these categories, and ran over and was looking at all the different categories. And there was a category called Dog with the Waggiest Tail. And she would always wag her tail all the time, wouldn't take anything, any encouragement. And it 10 to the dozen, crazy wagging tail. I was like, in the bag, I'll enter in this. I was really excited. I put our name down and I ran back to mum and dad and was like, oh, I've got a vent to do and Dog with the Wagger's Tail, can't wait. And was watching all the other. And then I started watching the dog show really intently because I was like, I've got to pick up some tips and try and win this category. And a lot of the owners were holding dog treats for their dogs. There was a category called Dog with the Most Obedient Eyes.
What?
It's like ingrained into my memory. I'll never forget that category.
That's so creepy and specific.
Yeah, really. I don't know who came up with
that. Who judges that?
Some old Tory came up with that. But like, it was I remember watching Dog with the Most Obedient Eyes. And they all had dog treats for their dogs. So it's like they blow the whistle, like, go. And then everyone pulled out a dog treat and their dogs just looking really obediently and sitting and being a good dogs waiting for the treat. But I'm like, yeah.
Does someone just go up and stare into their eyes at that point?
Yeah, a judge, yes. So not up close, but a judge then walked up and down the line. So behind the owners and behind the dogs, but not in between, because that would be unfair.
Yeah.
And looked in the, and looked to see which dog had the most obedient eyes. We stand at the end of the row as well and get a good vantage point, get a good look and be like, oh, okay, yeah. And one of them would win. But I'm seven. I don't understand why that's worked for that category.
Yeah.
I've just thought that's what you do for, like, that's what you do for any category, is you pull out a dog treat. So I'm like, wagging his tail, I'm going to do that. Yeah, exactly.
I know what's happening next.
So as soon as, like, I go up there with her, really excited. There's, like, a performance area that's, like, ticker-taped off, and around that there's all, like, people sitting on picnic blankets and watching it. And they blow the whistle. And everyone else is just, is like, going, come on, come on, come on, like that at their dog and smacking their legs, and the dogs are going crazy and wagging their tail. They're like, come on, go, come up here. And I'm just holding a dog treat, and Stephen Minnie, the sausage dog, is just sitting completely still.
With
the most obedient eyes you've ever seen. And just looking at me, just completely like a statue. And I don't know why it's not working. Like, so I'm just like trying to emphasize the treat with my hand and really like, you know, come on, look. Like, I'm like just not doing anything. And I don't understand. I was like, the treat worked for the last one, and why isn't it? Well, this is my secret weapon, and everyone else has just not got a treat, and their dogs are wagging. And I remember looking up, and I still see this guy's face every time I'm dying on stage now.
Oh my God.
Like, and this whole story, I've realized looking back at it for this podcast, is like, it's why I am the way I am on stage all the time. I have thrown so many gigs by telling the audience to go fuck themselves. And it is just because every time I feel like that 7-year-old kid holding a dog treat, and it's not working, and it worked for the last one. Why isn't it working at this one? And then looking at the audience, and they're like, this guy's shit. And you're like, go fuck yourselves! Like defending the sausage dog, the imaginary sausage dog that I've got on stage of me. But like, I remember looking up, and he was this guy, probably in his 30s, stubble, shades, and a bandana. Like, proper like a... like a baddie you'd put in like a 80s TV show. Like, yeah. What you doing, kid? Like a proper, like, and he was just there laughing at me. He was pointing at me, and then he was nudging his friends and pointing at me again, and his friends were laughing. And I remember at that point, the goal became, don't cry. So at that point, you're there like, right, I'm currently trying to... So I'm fully aware I've lost this competition. But I have to get, and at that point, I remember just thinking, just please blow the whistle. So, just blow the whistle so we can end this, because I'm just trapped here now. And I still don't know what to do. And eventually they blow the whistle. I'm like, okay. So, like, I'm out. And then I give Minnie the treat. And I wish I'd waited until I was sitting down again. But I didn't. Instead, I was like, he said I'm out. So I just immediately threw the treat to her. I'm still like on the stage. And then as soon as she gets the treat, she eats it and then wags her tail faster than anyone else's dog has wagged it the whole time. And then that gets a massive laugh from that from that picnic blanket group, from the guy in the bandana. So now I remember walking off, and it was just like you're walking on the grass, and my mum... So I was doing really well at not crying. I remember getting to the tape thing, and my mum is sitting the other side of the tape, and she looked at me, and you know that look from your mum where she knows, just a look to let you know exactly, like, that she knows exactly what I've just been through and how I feel, and a real sympathetic look. And I remember bursting into tears just before I got through the thing, so I'm still technical on the set, and then kind of melting through that tape into her arms and just crying there. And I spent the rest of the day just cradling Minnie the sausage dog in my arms and apologising to her for it and saying, like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that I did that to you and that you were humiliated. Because, like, you know, as soon as I bought this dog, as soon as I chose this dog, I wanted to protect her. She was like the runt. And so now I'm like, I've let you down. And, like, I meant to keep you out of Hub's way. And now the bandana man's laughed at you, even though you had your back turned to him so you couldn't see it and probably not aware. But, like, really, really crying and, like, apologizing to her. And, like, I just think, honestly, every single part of my stand, especially this year, when we've been in lockdown, none of us have, I've been doing no gigs this year. And I've really reflected on live performance and my relationship with it. And just thinking, like, that whole story is just exactly how I feel about live gigs. It's this thing about so excited beforehand, watch other people and what they do and go, okay, that works, I can't wait to do it. Get on stage. It goes wrong. I hate the audience. And afterwards, I'm like, just after any gig, like, I'm just in a hotel room with an imaginary sausage dog just apologising and saying how sorry I am. Like, that's how I feel about the whole... It doesn't make me miss it at all.
That's lovely.
That was a really well thought out, fantastic story. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. I'm going to give you the wheel and... If you'd be able to pick a new subject for us to put on the wheel, I would really appreciate that. Wait there.
Oh yes, I love this wheel, and I love the theme tune as well. We've got a question about the theme tune.
Go on.
So when you say, do you say we'll spin it round or we're spinning round?
I go wheel spinning round. I thought it was quite 60s, but maybe it should be we're spinning round, like we're on Earth.
Because I think it's we're spinning round and it really makes me laugh every time.
Wait, we love it. I also, people have asked me, is it wheel of misfortune or we love misfortune? And
deliberate, surely.
That's, yeah.
I feel, I'm a genius, what can I say?
Like Isle of Dogs.
Exactly. So... What I'm going to take off pets off the thing here, and what would you like to put on instead of pets?
Now, yeah, very good. I mean, there's so many. maybe holidays. Is there a holidays one?
Yeah, that's one. Yeah,
let's pop it on. Holidays is perfect.
Holidays, yeah. Holidays can be pretty traumatic.
I'm going to write down holiday here and, I'll pop that on the wheel.
Thank you very much
for coming on.
Cheers. Thank you for having me. It's a wonderful podcast and I hope it continues to grow and grow.
Hopefully. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Bye.
Bye.
Ready to spin?
Okay. Going to spin this wheel. Spin, 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 spin.
Stop.
Oh, perfect. What's the stop done?
It's on Halloween.
Oh my god, that's so scary. Oh my god, I'm fully spooked out. And that's scary because that's just in time for Halloween as well.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, the worlds have aligned.
Fuck's sake. Please subscribe to the podcast on the BBC Sounds app. You can follow us on social media. I'm on Twitter at Fern Brady and Instagram at Fern from Bathgate. Alison is on Twitter and Instagram at Alison in Spittal. We Love Misfortune with Alison and Fern is produced by Beth O'Dea. It's a BBC Bristol production for BBC Sounds.
We love misfortune for a humorous lens. That's why rabbits and ferrets can't be friends.
You got a chinchilla and he sucks his dick.
Yes!
You bury your dog and your aunt is a prick.
When the world gets you down, music can help you through. In 2017, my life took a bit of a bad turn. And the way I coped is by listening to as many records from the previous year as I could. I'm James Acaster, and I believe that 2016 is the greatest year for music ever.
I've been listening to it backwards.
Backwards?
I've been listening to it backwards.
So on my podcast, me and my comedian friends will discuss my favourite albums of that year in order to convince every single one of you to...
That's a classic album right there.
James Acaster's Perfect Sounds.
Listen now on BBC Sounds.